welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dodson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on Whiting Mayor Joe Stahura agreeing to plead guilty to wire and tax fraud. Governor Eric Holcomb is keeping his finger pressed on the pause button for Indiana's reopening plan. And Chris Nolte has a conversation with Sherry Ziller, the Chief Operating Officer for Northwest Indiana Regional Planning Authority. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Whiting Mayor Joe Stahura has been charged by federal attorneys with wire fraud and tax fraud, and he's agreed to plead guilty to those charges. His wife, Diana, was named in a deferred prosecution agreement with the U.S. Attorney's Office in Hammond. U.S. Attorney Thomas Kirch said Thursday that the elected official of 35 years used his campaign fund between 2014 and 2019 for personal expenditures like gambling, credit card debt, and providing financial support to an adult daughter. Mayor Stahura told the Times that no city money was ever touched, and he plans to resign in the days ahead. He was chairman and treasurer of his campaign committee, and Attorney Kurtz said that Stahura used approximately $255,000 of the funds from the committee for personal purposes while disguising the activity by filing campaign reports with false and misleading information. Indiana campaign finance law restricts the use of money contributed to a campaign committee. Use for personal expenses are not allowed under the rules. Joe Stahura has been Whiting mayor since 2004, and prior to that, he served as a Whiting city councilman for 20 years.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Several of the beaches in Michigan City reopened Friday, including Washington Park. The beaches are open to residents of LaPorte County with a valid 2019 or 2020 beach sticker. It will be open 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. The beaches have been closed due to COVID-19 restrictions. All residents are required to wear face coverings except when in the water swimming or exercising.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
More than 3,000 Hoosiers have died since the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Lauren Chapman reports more than half died before mid-May.
Over the weekend, the Indiana State Department of Health reported its 3,000th confirmed COVID-19 death since March 15th. Nearly 60% of those deaths come from long-term care facilities. Marion County has the highest number of deaths by far, with nearly 750. But Tipton and Decatur counties have the highest rate of deaths by population. State health officials say there are more than 200 suspected COVID-19 deaths, where a test wasn't administered, but healthcare professionals believe the person had the virus. While the state's reported cases have spiked over the last month, reported deaths have, so far, maintained an average of about 10 per day. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Lauren Chapman.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dodson.
Indiana U.S. Senator Mike Braun says a vaccine for coronavirus is coming. But the Republican is less certain about another round of pandemic relief funding. In a visit to Muncie Tuesday, the Republican, who sits on the U.S. Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions, says there's never really been a cure for a virus. But he thanked President Donald Trump for rolling back what he calls bureaucratic approach so work on a vaccine could be accelerated.
This has ginned up more entrepreneurial effort than anything I've seen vis-a-vis the government. Had it been a more bureaucratic approach, we'd be still stumbling around trying to decide whether the CDC or the FDA was going to be in charge of the vaccine.
Braun likened the current U.S. Congress to the Hatfields and McCoys, two historical feuding clans. He says there's so much divide between the Senate Republicans' Arthur Hills Act and the House of Representatives-approved HEROES Act.
It addressed some of the main parts of what we were trying to hash out where we were so far apart.
Braun says Congress is slow and executive orders are quick. He says he hopes no lawmakers or others take Trump's recent orders to court to stop them.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Governor Eric Holcomb is keeping his finger pressed on the pause button for Indiana's reopening plan. The state will stay in its current phase, stage 4.5, for at least another month. That means, for instance, restaurants can only be at 75% capacity, while bars, nightclubs, and tourism sites are at 50%. Holcomb says that extension comes even as some of Indiana's COVID-19 metrics, like the rate at which tests come back positive, are trending down.
We don't want that to trend up. We'd like to see it start to trend down even more so.
The governor is also extending his statewide order to wear masks in public for another month. He says he understands people's frustrations, but insists the state must, quote, deal with reality.
Is it spreading in fraternity houses? Is it spreading in church services? Is it spreading at work? Is it spreading at home? Is it spreading when we let our guard down?
Indiana has been in its current reopening stage since early July.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The NAACP is offering up to $300 for African American residents struggling to pay their energy bills due to COVID-19. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Rebecca Thiel reports, this comes about a week after the state allowed utilities to resume disconnections for unpaid bills.
According to a study by Indiana University, a lot of the people who have lost jobs during the pandemic are the same ones who had trouble paying their bills before the crisis: low-income, elderly, African-American, and Latino residents. At the same time, LaTanya Troutman with the NAACP says people are spending more time at home, and it's hot outside, which is driving those energy bills up even further. Many people are having to make tough choices between paying for housing, food, and energy.
The governor's saying, hey, the moratorium's ended and we're kind of back to normal, but there is no normal because you're behind.
The Indiana NAACP is also working to establish job opportunities, energy-efficient housing, and solar power to help decrease energy insecurity in the state. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Rebecca Thiel.
To receive utility assistance through the NAACP, you must be African American or of African descent, referred by a local NAACP branch, and show that you faced hardship due to the COVID-19 crisis.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Mediation help is now available to Hoosier landlords and their tenants at risk of eviction, free of charge from the Indiana government. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports both the landlord and renter must agree to the mediation, and the goal is to keep eviction cases out of the courts whenever possible.
Potential settlement outcomes can include payment plans and back payments, but they can also still involve eviction. Still, Chief Justice Loretta Rush says keeping the matter out of court can be beneficial.
Without legal costs and also the stigma that comes along with having an eviction.
Having an eviction court filing on your record can make it harder to find housing in the future. The third-party facilitators available through the program are registered mediators, attorneys, and judges who are provided training, resources, and compensation. People can request mediation at courts.in.gov/facilitate. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Indiana Secretary of State Connie Lawson insists the state will have a, quote, normal election this fall and won't expand mail-in voting. Many Hoosiers, even via lawsuits, have pushed the state to allow anyone to vote by mail for the general election, as Indiana did for its primary. But Republicans, including Lawson, have rejected those pleas. There are about a dozen reasons you can legally cast a mail-in ballot, including if you're confined to your home by illness. Lawson says fears over COVID-19 for those in high-risk populations might fall under that provision.
But if you're still going to the grocery store and running other errands, you're not confined to your home.
Even without expanded vote by mail, Lawson says the state expects a significant increase in mail-in ballots this year.
We are working with the post office to ensure that ballots are prioritized by the Postal Service and are received in a timely manner.
Still, Lawson encourages those who want to and can vote by mail to request their ballot and return it as soon as possible. Indiana is one of just six states that refuses to expand vote by mail this fall.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
The Political Action Committee, tied to the largest teachers union in Indiana, is not endorsing a candidate in the race for governor. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jenny Lindsay explains the group instead plans to focus on helping candidates in legislative races.
The Indiana Political Action Committee for Education, or IPACE, is the political arm of the Indiana State Teachers Association. In a statement last week, IPACE says it won't endorse any candidate running for governor like it usually does. Instead, ISTA President Keith Gamble says IPACE will support teachers running for seats in the General Assembly. He says lawmakers have acted as a, quote, roadblock for positive change in public schools.
So we've decided to focus our limited financial resources in this election to those races.
But the outcome of the governor's race will play a key role in the future of education in Indiana. The winner will appoint Indiana's top education official for the first time after current Superintendent Jennifer McCormick leaves office. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jeannie Lindsay.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Sherry Ziller, Chief Operating Officer for the Northwest Indiana Regional Planning Authority.
Residents here in Northwest Indiana are going to have an opportunity to find out more about ideas that could be some potential residential or business development areas that are being proposed around where the South Shore Line train stations are. And to find out more about it, let's check in with the Northwest Indiana Regional Development Authority and with Sherry Ziller. She's the Chief Development Officer for the organization. Thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thank you, Chris. Good to be with you and to talk about our work on the Transit Development District.
Well, thank you very much for being with us. And for folks that are not familiar with what are called Transit Development Districts, what are they and how do they fit into the scheme of things that the RDA is looking into here?
Sure. So I would say the RDA leads the initiative on developing what we call the Transit Development District, but we commonly call them by their acronym, so TDD, but Transit Development District, which are essentially the drawing of a boundary, a half a mile, and then we can expand it up to a mile around each of the South Shore stations, and that would be the existing stations and then the proposed Westlake stations. We have a TDD steering committee that meets every quarter, and we have representation from each of the stations that a TDD could be drawn. So the intent of that is to draw the boundary, like I said, a half a mile first, in a way that will produce the best return both currently and in the future. So it's important that we capture the most current and potential new developments in the boundary and even the current development that's in there, because then that increment collected, property tax, income tax, even sales tax, but the sales tax does go to the state. So those, that increment can then be used to further the development at our South Shore stations. So any increment that's collected in a district goes right back to the district for all TOD planning, and then the implementation, of course, of the boundary. And then we're able to work with developers, and we've been in constant communication with many of our communities to get a better handle on what development is likely to occur, how we can get development to occur, and how we can entice developers to be interested in our communities.
Now, you mentioned here at the outset of our conversation about setting up these transit development districts, and primarily along the Westlake Corridor, which is the newest section of the South Shore Line that's going to be built from the current line, which runs east and west, and it comes down, of course, through Hammond all the way south down into Dyer. What are some of the places that these districts may be set up? What areas are we looking at when you take this southbound leg, so to speak, all the way down?
Wherever the proposed areas are, and I probably don't know them off the top of my head where they are, but I'm South Hammond is over by 173rd, and then you have kind of more the Hammond Gateway Station, which isn't quite downtown, but it's a few miles north of that, and then Dyer is kind of over by Main Street, and Munster, you do have it's kind of by Ridge Road over
right.
there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the Westlake stations are. But I can get you the intersections. I just don't know them at the top of my head.
It's an idea. It's an idea of just, you know, the areas that we know that are likely to be the best places to do the kind of development that you're looking at for these districts, right?
Yeah, it would be wherever those proposed stations are that NICTI has, and then we would draw it's. So it doesn't have to be a perfect circle, but we would look at the statute allows us to draw that boundary a half a mile around each station. And it doesn't have, like I said, does not have to be a perfect circle. And we kind of say it in a way, it sounds kind of odd, but it can be an amoeba shape. So that the intent of that is to capture the most potential for the return on investment there.
Now we're talking too for the double tracking segment of the project, which of course is expanding the line to double tracking between Gary and Michigan City. We're talking about around the current stations, right? We're talking about in Miller and Ogden Dunes and over in Michigan City proper too, right?
Yeah. It actually, so it includes all the double track stations, and then it actually does include South Bend, so we can go as far. We go right to the end of the line.
Well, that'd be interesting because we know there's lots of open land on the far end because the South Shore Line ends at the South Bend Airport. And so there's plenty of, I'm sure, development over there that not only that the South Shore Line would like to take advantage of, but the city of South Bend would too.
Yeah, definitely. And we do think that South Bend has a ton of potential over there, and we can generate some developer interest. And you know, we work with our team. We work with Policy Analytics. We work with MKSK, and we work with KPMG. And the services that we provide on this project is we do a lot of the planning work for our communities, and then we do we test the market to see what the market can bear. So that's where KPMG comes into it. And then when we do that, we do then our analysis on the best return on investment, so the highest and best use of that land that you're talking about. We conduct that analysis, not just in South Bend, but all along the stations in Indiana.
Tell us a little bit about MKSK, as they're known. They're a designing and planning firm, and that's the firm that you are working with, I guess, the most in working locally to get things plotted out for these transit development districts.
Sure. So they're providing the planning for all of the stations. They are out of, I want to say, Ohio, but they've done work all along the Midwest. So they're the planners for all of our stations here. So they're looking at the land and they're looking at the best use of it, and they're going to help us. They're going to be the ones that really help us hone in and draw the boundaries, and then that works in conjunction with with KPMG and then also Policy Analytics to determine what that increment can be. Because we want to try to produce the highest increment. So it is kind of this process here where we need to know what we're looking at. So the planners come in and tell us exactly what we're looking at. They tell us, you know, how many story buildings, you know, is it that will, that are what we're interested in, and what is the zoning regulation. So they'll look at what is currently zoned at, and then they'll also look at what another potential use could be there. So just, you know, kind of rearranging things and giving our community something else to look at, different scenarios to look at, and then getting our community's reaction from there. So that's kind of the process in a nutshell.
Now, you mentioned that in these what they call TDDs, that they're about a half mile or so range around the stations. If there are any issues involving zoning, say there's an area that is not, as it's set up now, just happens to be in a residential area. Michigan City is a good example of that. 11th Street, the train tracks go right through residential neighborhoods. And if these districts may want to say there might be some good development for, say, business or that sort, there's going to have to be some rezoning. Do they have to do some serious work with the local planners, the plan commissions and the boards of zoning appeals and all that, to be able to get these changes ready so that developers can take advantage of them?
Sure, that's a great question. So how it's currently zoned now is something that we're working with. So that's part of this process. So we need to understand what it's zoned as. And if through this process, when working with the leadership at the communities, and even when we go out for the public engagement, if we receive feedback that, you know, maybe it could be a better use of that, then that is something that we look at. And the zoning authority still rests with our communities. That's not something that the RDA necessarily has jurisdiction or any authority over, for that matter. It's simply a recommendation.
They'll have to consult with them, I suppose. If there are questions, they'll consult with the local planning people if there are questions that come up, I assume.
Yeah, the RDA is simply there to say, you know, we've conducted some analysis, we've looked at this, we have some ideas, we believe that, it's zoned correctly, and, you know, we're going to love working with this, and we can do a lot here, or, you know, if it can be zoned differently, here's our recommendation, here's our proposal, and kind of, you know, work with them through the process.
We're talking with Sherry Ziller. She's the Chief Development Officer for the Northwest Indiana Regional Planning Authority. We're talking about the idea of what are called transit development districts that are going to be set up as part of the work that will be done in expanding and creating new lines for the South Shore Line. Sherry, can you give us an idea, first off, what kind of public meetings have been held up to now, and how will the general public be able to actually get involved in this?
We're going to be able to go out to public here, we think, in the month of September. So right now we've been conducting a lot of our work with the communities. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Michigan City, Munster, Dyer, Portage, Ogden Dunes, East Chicago, Hammond, pretty much all of them, to be honest. And the next part of our process here is to engage the public. So when we had our steering committee meeting last week, we did introduce the concept. So we are looking at September, and I think we'll probably try to do just a few communities that we're a little bit further along with, Michigan City, Munster, Dyer, Portage, and Ogden Dunes. Mm-hmm. And then we'll be able to do two public engagement sessions, and we'll introduce what we're calling the study areas. And we want the public's feedback there. So we want to, you know, make sure, hey, did we get it right? Is there something else we should be looking at? What are your thoughts? What would you like to see? What sort of buildings? What sort of look and feel? Give us some examples from places that you visited. And then we take all that into consideration. And then we'll go back to the public and we'll present to them kind of a final draft of what we, you know, what we were able to incorporate from their feedback. And then we follow the public process thereafter. So that would be part one. There's a few other parts with that the RDA Board of Directors would be very much involved in. We'll have some public hearings. We'll have some public meetings. And then we go to the state budget committee to present our pack to them to get their sign off.
Do you think, Sherry, if things go well, that the public hearings and discussion and the like will wrap up sometime yet this calendar year, that the state budget committee will get a chance to take a look at it, maybe when the lawmakers are back in session in January?
We're sure going to try, Chris. We understand, you know, the public health crisis here, and that's going to push us back a little bit. So that's why we've been having individual conversations with the communities to see what they're comfortable with and to see, you know, what the RDA is comfortable with. We want to make sure that we are getting the most public involvement that we possibly can, but we also want to make sure that everyone's safe. So we've come up with some hybrid approaches that we're working with MTISK, and we're floating those ideas with the communities. So if they wanted to be there in person, they could. And then we can also set up some online components for the public to view some information that we can share with them, submit some inquiries, submit their thoughts, so we can cast the widest net possible, given the you know, parameters that we're working within these days. But our hope is to get that started in the month of September.
Sherry Ziller is the Chief Development Officer for the Northwest Indiana Regional Development Authority. We've been finding out more about the process that's underway to draft, create, and put out for public review what are called transit development districts, and they're part of the expansion that's going to happen on the South Shoreline. And Sherry, thank you for being with us to talk about it today.
Chris, always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by bensound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.